Hi there, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'll be your host this week, Dave Bedard. This week on the show, we're looking forward to fall, and not just because every food and beverage item for retail sales suddenly tastes vaguely like pumpkin pie. We'll be talking about what to keep in mind if you're planning to put down fertilizer this fall.
We like to target nitrogen applications to when soils are cooling down.
Also, just as everyone with millions of dollars to spend on pulse processing is getting ramped up, pulse crops in North America are going to be a lot harder to find this fall.
The Canadian bees may all be gone by the time India changes its import duties and import quotas.
Also, I'd like to mention another way you can find us, namely, we're now also on YouTube. Just search Between the Rows Podcast. Again, make sure to punch in Between the Rows Podcast. You'll find our latest episodes there, and we really hope to use that YouTube space to post additional resources on our coverage. You know, something else worth hitting that red subscribe button for. And we're also hoping it's going to be another space where you can drop us a line. You know, let us know what you think about BTR, or maybe tell us about a story we should be taking a look at. Or maybe you're already there, and you're waiting for this week's episode, which begins right after this.
Thanks for calling the Crop Guru.
Yeah, I'm wondering about increasing yield and return with optimal P&K applications.
Reply hazy, try again.
Okay, I also need a nutrient removal calculator.
Cannot predict now.
Hold on, are you using a magic 8-ball?
Signs point to yes.
Get less guessing and more data. Expert research, advice, and soil management tools are available for free at Nutrien Economics. That's nutrien-ekonomics.com.
So it's well known that putting in fall fertilizer can be a real time saver the following spring, shaving a few days off the start of seeding next year, and more likely than not to be cheaper than buying the same products in the springtime. But coming off a dry year like the one we just saw across much of Western Canada can still complicate matters, even after harvest. And to talk about that, we have John Hurd here. He's Soil Fertility Extension Specialist with Manitoba's Agriculture Department. Mr. Hurd, hi, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Oh, thank you.
Now, we should start with the basics here. You know, putting on fall fertilizer seems to be more of a Manitoba thing than in other parts of the West. What farmers on the prairies are more likely to put on fall fertilizer in a normal year, and why?
Well, we still tend to do this in Manitoba, and it's largely because zero till has been much more widely adopted in Saskatchewan and Alberta. And one of the things with zero till is that it works well with one-pass seeding in the spring, where they're more likely to either sideband or mid-row band their nitrogen at seeding. In Manitoba, we still tend to do more tillage or more residue management in the fall. And if we do that with an implement that also puts down nitrogen, we can kind of kill two birds with one stone. And you may say, why do we do more tillage here? Traditionally, we're a wetter environment. High levels of crop residue produced, and people want to do some sort of incorporation of that or handle that so that they can seed in the spring. So that's just left us with about 35 to 45% of our farmers here choose to put down nitrogen, largely nitrogen, in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the usual window for fall application? It doesn't close before Thursday this week, does it?
No, and hopefully it doesn't start before Thursday of this week, because what we do, we like to target nitrogen applications to when soils are cooling down. When we put nitrogen on in the fall, we want it to go into winter ideally in the ammonium form. We don't wish it to convert to nitrate. Once it converts to nitrate, then it's subject to losses to leaching and denitrification. But that process, that conversion is microbial. And if so, we apply our anhydrous ammonia or urea under cold conditions, that process proceeds very slowly. And that means most of our nitrogen overwinters as ammonium or a form that's resistant or unable to be leached or denitrified.
Back
to the question, what's very common is to wait till after Thanksgiving and then go out. By then, soils often are 10 degrees C or less and tending to cool. And that's always tended to be a traditional target. And it kind of fits with, you know, our 5 to 10 degree target.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there some products that are the fertilizer products rather that are better suited to fall application than others?
Well, historically, anhydrous ammonia has been a common product to go down in the fall. And again, for Manitoba farmers, if they're tending to do a bit of tillage anyways, this application will, so to speak, kill two birds with one stone. But urea can also go down. Something that we do like to see is if people are struggling to get enough phosphorus down at seeding, dual-banded nitrogen and phosphorus in the fall can be a very effective way to help meet those maintenance amounts of phosphorus. So generally, though, it tends to be urea and anhydrous ammonia are the nitrogen products of choice in the fall. But in recent years, we've seen the development of some of the enhanced efficiency fertilizers that have a controlled release aspect, such as ESN, and something like that could go down earlier. Likewise, inhibited nitrification inhibited products do also open that window a bit, means we could put them down a little earlier without risk of loss. And that would be, for example, using Super U instead of urea, or treating anhydrous ammonia with NSERV or Centuro, or an increasing number of inhibitors are tending to be tested and coming to the market.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk specifically about this year. Now, how much of what we've just talked about is doable when the soils, and you know, traditionally wetter soils as well, are abnormally dry?
Well, if we were talking a month ago, that would be our exact conversation. But actually, we received moisture. And if anything, our soils are in better shape now to receive, you know, anhydrous ammonia or urea than perhaps we've seen the last several years. Two falls ago, it was too wet we were struggling through. Last year, it was very dry. Folks were actually, you know, breaking equipment, trying to bending shanks, trying to get into the very dry soil. But we've actually, in much of Manitoba now, had rainfall that's helped to soften the soil and may allow us to get on there. There are also some parts of the province that have been soaked, and some of those guys are still hoping that they can get the crop off without rutting it up much.
Mm-hmm. Now, if the soil had stayed dry, I mean, what would we be looking at? What would we be looking at this fall terms of trying to get fall fertilizer in?
Well, in that case, we've got a couple options. The problem with dry is that the soil generally always has enough moisture to hold the ammonia, but what happens is that we tend to end up with big clods that don't seal very well, and so we can get free ammonia loss from this cloddy soil. When the soil is at a better moisture content, we'll tend to get better firming and sealing behind, and that's good. But if we have cloddy soils, our options are this. Band the ammonia deeper, which is sometimes hard to do. Do some pre-tillage so that it breaks up the clods a little smaller with the pre-tillage pass. Right now in the dry cycle, people are really not wanting to do any more tillage than possible. Mm-hmm. But the third option was always wait and let's see, maybe we'll get some moisture and then we'll have suitable soil conditions for banding.
Now, are there any other cautions that people might want to, or any other precautions that people might want to keep in mind before they set out to do this fall?
Well, good question, because one of the things coming out of a drought, we're always suspicious if there is more than normal leftover nitrogen remaining if crop yields are lower diminished. And that appears to be the case here. In some of the drier parts of Manitoba, we're hearing, I heard today, of levels as high as 110, 140, up to 200 pounds residual nitrogen following some of these failed or droughted out crops. Now that nitrogen, that's there now, and it is what's available for next year's crop to grow. So before any equipment goes to the field to apply fertilizer, I really hope that growers assess, do an inventory, and see what's there. With some of the very high carryover, they may well wish to adjust their fertility program, may decide that they can get on in the spring with their planter sufficient that they don't need to do fall operations. There are also parts of the province that have had some fortuitous rainfall, amounts of rainfall and timing with some very good yields. And I expect in those areas, nitrogen levels will be depleted in the soil. Surveys have shown, farmers tell us, that about 40 to 45% of Manitoba farmers soil test for nitrogen every year. And I would only hope and expect that that will go up this year as they try to tap into and see what's left in the soil.
Mm-hmm. And well, obviously, if it's more ideal now, that's great. I mean, is it possible that we could see even better application conditions? Sort of heading closer to that ideal, that sort of that sweet spot for application. Or,
well, yes, I expect that. Well, I don't control the weather, but I expect maybe we'll have some moisture between now and mid-October, and those are probably the area that people are targeting. Now, I don't know where all your broadcast goes to, but of course, folks in Manitoba know that we have environmental laws to protect the environment that close the door on nitrogen and phosphorus fertilizer application around November 10th. So that's the end date we target. So farmers will look at, you know, what's the acreage that they have, what's the capability of their equipment, and, you know, when do I start in order to have reasonable expectation of having my nitrogen on in time.
Mm-hmm. So farmers who've got their crops in off the field might still have reason to watch the skies for a little while yet. Mr. Hurt, thanks very much for your time today.
Oh, hope that works for you. Have a good fall.
Thank you. You too. John Hurt is a soil fertility specialist with the Provincial Department of Agriculture and Resource Development at Carmen, Manitoba. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. Last week, the Canadian Special Crops Association held its Pulse and Special Crops Convention online, and one would think it's a fortuitous time to be in the Canadian pulse crop business, with processors such as Roquette and Merit Foods bringing their plants online here on the prairies. So finding demand for pulse proteins is obviously not going to be a problem, which in 2021 leaves us with the rather thorny question of supply. For that, we've got Sean Pratt on the phone. He's a reporter for The Western Producer who sat in on the conference and has been reporting on it this week. Sean, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the numbers for those who haven't been keeping score at home. If we look at the pulse crops grown here on the prairies, you know, peas, lentils, dry beans, chickpeas, what do we know so far about how these crops survived the summer, you know, relative to, you know, canola, wheat, the other major field crops?
Well, if you go off the StatsCan yield estimates, the lentils, chickpeas, beans are sort of in the 20 to 30% below last year's levels. So they fared a little bit better than some of the cereal crops, which were in the 30 to 40% drop range. But peas are kind of lumped in with those cereals. They were hit pretty hard.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the StatsCan estimates are concerned, you know, how optimistic are pulse crop traders that we're actually going to see crops like the official estimates predict?
Well, I guess it depends on the crop. I sense some skepticism about the lentil number. StatsCan is forecasting a 29% drop in lentil yields, and I think it was about a 34% drop in lentil production. But there is one analyst, Marlena Bersh, with Mercantile Consulting Venture. She said the Stats Canada number is 1,030 pounds per acre for yield. But she said, based on some of the early crop yields by district in Saskatchewan, that number could fall as low as 855 pounds per acre. She's not ready to drop her estimate to that level just yet, but she she said it's kind of a signal that maybe yields are going to drop a little further in future reports out of Stats Canada. And I got that sense from other panelists on the lentil panel. So that one may be one to watch out for.
Mm-hmm. And peas is also an interesting one. I gather from your reports that our neighbors to the immediate south haven't fared much better than Canada has in growing peas this year either.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, I would suggest that they fared worse in key states like North Dakota, Minnesota, Washington. There was the drought was pretty grim. Colorado, Michigan, it was kind of a little bit better, but all in all, analysts thought, you know, maybe the pea production there will be about half of a normal crop, which is obviously not very good. So that sort of sets up for an interesting dynamic in terms of the demand side of the equation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, like in theory, they'd be turning to Canada to meet some of that supply, but our supply is not going to be that great either. You know, so and here we've got a major potential customer who doesn't need to put peas on a boat to bring them in from Canada. You know, how's that going to affect Canada's markets this year for peas?
Well, Chuck Penner, analyst with Left Field Commodity Research, thinks that the U.S. is going to be the driver of the pea market this year, because they've got a huge fractionation industry there, and they've also got a huge pet food industry in the States that are using a lot of peas these days. So while production in the U.S. is estimated at 500,000 tons, the domestic demand is up around 850,000 tons. And there's also going to be more peas needed so that the U.S. can fulfill at least some of its export obligations. So they're going to be a big buyer of peas this year. In fact, Penner was forecasting 450,000 tons of imports from the U.S., up from about 100,000 tons last year.
Wow.
And they're already bidding up pea prices well above Canadian pea price levels. He thinks they're going to be a very big player in the market, and Canada is going to supply the lion's share of that 450,000 tons. So that means that some overseas markets are going to have to be working at the curtail exports to some markets like Bangladesh and China. Penner was saying China was already starting to cut back on its pea imports, because they're not going into the feed channels like they were last year to the same extent. So on the China front, it may be kind of the timing might be right, I guess. China's going to be looking for less peas, and they're going to get less peas from Canada. Mm-hmm. It sets up an interesting dynamic, and the real potential question mark, I guess, is India. Right now, they're just a non-entity in the pea market and have been for a few years. But there are some talk that they may be in the market again, and that would really could really spark a price run if India is desperate for peas. But they may be in the market too late. The Canadian peas may all be gone by the time India changes its import duties and import quotas.
Mm-hmm. And we don't have much shortage of domestic demand here either. I mean, with new processors coming online, there's going to be no shortage of demand in here in Canada alone for peas.
Yeah, that's right. We're kind of mimicking the U.S. and starting to get a fractionation industry of our own going here. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be, you know, good demand domestically and also from on the feed pea side of things, depending on where competing ingredients like corn and barley end up, there could be some decent feed demand for peas as well in Canada. So, yeah, you're right. There's demand from all corners of the world, it seems, and but the supply is the question mark.
Mm-hmm. Now, I gather that it's pretty much the same scenario that's expected to play out for chickpeas right now as well. You know, that basically that there's a supply has fallen short overseas, and players may be looking to Canada for to supply chickpeas as well.
Yeah, the U.S. is our main chickpea market, and so they're going to be gobbling up, you know, basically everything that we have to sell. They buy, like, I don't know, somewhere around 90% of what Canada sells. So it's a big market for chickpeas, but it's a small crop. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about Stats Canada is saying 63,000 tons of chickpea production. Penner thinks it'll be more likely 60 to 80,000 tons. But either way, we don't have a lot of chickpeas to sell. So the U.S. is going to have to be sourcing chickpeas from alternate suppliers like Mexico, and maybe even as far afield as Russia. It's a different scenario than the pea one, because we can largely supply all the peas that the U.S. is going to need, but we don't have the ability to do that with chickpeas.
Okay. And I was interested also in your reports about the dry bean markets, you know, like black beans, navy, pinto bean, and so on. You know, obviously the new crop is going to be smaller, but if the stats are accurate, you know, someone in Canada seems to have old crop beans still in the bin and hasn't sold them yet?
Yeah, well, apparently Stats Canada believes there's a little over 100,000 tons of carry-in coming into this new crop year. Now, the analysts, Penner, is quite skeptical of that number. And the reason he's skeptical is that the prices are high for beans, and it doesn't seem to reflect that there's this big carryout out there. And I know some of the exporters and processors that were on the bean panel were in agreement with Penner that, you know, they tried to source beans this summer and just were unable to. So they're also skeptical that there's that much carryout coming in. I mean, if Stats Canada's right, we'll have about 500,000 tons of bean supply, which would be well above the typical crop of around 400,000 tons of supply. So that would sort of suggest that, you know, maybe these really strong prices might not, you know, that there might be a cap on those. But, you know, if Penner and the other panelists are right, and that the carry out number is smaller than that, or much smaller than that, you know, we could see beans taking out the previous highs that were set, I think it was back in 2011, of about 50 cents a pound. So, you know, the bean market really is going to pivot on that carry-in number and how accurate that is.
And on top of all this, potential buyers, I gather, have another problem to contend with, at least overseas buyers, in terms of actually getting product into their country. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, there was a separate panel all about the container shipping problems that have plagued the industry for, you know, a couple of years now. I was kind of surprised and shocked to hear Stephen Paul, Vice President of Supply Chain Logistics for Raymond Logistics. He says that they're anticipating probably a quarter of the volume of pulses to move through Vancouver, that's containerized pulses, in the coming year. So, you know, I knew things were bad, but boy, that sounds pretty grim, a quarter. Now, some of that will be that there's just less crop to export. But, you know, he sure painted a fairly grim picture about what's happening out in Vancouver. So the alternative is shipping pulses in containers through the Port of Montreal. That would be sort of the main alternative way to get those containerized pulses to market. But they really aren't set up to handle a significant increase in containerized pulses. They're, that container business really shifted to Vancouver many years ago, about 10 years ago. And so now it's kind of swinging back a bit towards Montreal, but they just don't have the infrastructure and the containers, frankly, to move all that extra business. So, that's a real problem for overseas buyers. And there's other problems facing them as well, like higher labor costs. Someone in the bean panel mentioned that the canners are facing higher steel prices. So for making their cans that they ship their beans out in. And so there's a myriad of problems facing buyers, not to mention, sky high pulse prices and freight rates.
Good grief. So if we follow all these reports to the bitter end, I mean, what are market watchers saying? I mean, is this, sort of a time for pulse growers to cash in or to continue to hold if they have anything?
Well, I can tell you, I didn't hear one person say anything about now's the time to sell, cash in now. they certainly seem to be suggesting that there's further price appreciation on the horizon for most of these crops. And, obviously there will be a point at which the demand starts to be rationed off, but they seem to suggest we haven't hit that point yet. There's still voracious demand, and the sense I got from listening to the panelists is that farmers are really in the driver's seat this year, and if they hold out a little longer, prices are going to rise a little further. So, but markets are fickle, mm-hmm. and when the downturn happens, it can it can turn in a hurry. So, but they sure seem to indicate that we're not at that point yet.
Mm-hmm. And now suddenly I am totally craving curry for lunch, and I get the feeling that I better get my chickpea fix in while the getting's good. Sean Pratt, thank you very much for your time today.
You bet. Thanks, Dave.
Sean Pratt is a reporter with the Western Producer in Saskatoon. You can check out his reports from the Pulse and Special Crops Convention at producer.com. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. And that's us for this week, but we'll be back next week with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications. And unless you're there already, don't forget, you can also now find us on YouTube. Search up Between the Rows Podcast. Make sure you have all those words in there and look for the BTR logo when you're scrolling down. Also, while I'm out here with the shameless self-promotion, I'd like to call attention to another basket of useful stuff we've been compiling for you. This one's called The Dry Times. It's a Glacier Farm Media resource guide for drought management, with not only drought-related stories from across our publications these past weeks, but some external links to related resources you can check out. You can find this at farmmedia.com/the-dry-times. One more time, farmmedia.com/the-dry-times. You've been listening to Between the Rows, and I've been your host this week, Dave Bedard. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for calling the Crop Guru.
Yeah, I'm wondering about increasing yield and return with optimal P&K applications.
Oh, reply hazy, try again.
Okay, I also need a nutrient removal calculator.
Cannot predict now.
Hold on. Are you using a magic 8-ball?
Signs point to yes.
Get less guessing and more data. Expert research, advice, and soil management tools are available for free at Nutrien Economics. That's Nutrien-Ekonomics.com.